Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Living on Blockchain. Today we are speaking to Bimlesh. Bimlesh is the co-founder of Foundership. He and Santosh have created Foundership HQ as an incubation platform for early stage Web3 startups. Bimlesh has had extensive experience as a technology executive and leader with over 22 years of global experience in building products, solution consulting, outsourcing, as well as entrepreneurship. He had also founded earlier PitchCamp and PharmEasy, and he's gotten some exits as well. So this particular conversation is really for the early stage Web3 entrepreneurs or builders who are figuring out as they go and as they build. Because at times, like we talk about in this conversation that you listen as well, that there are entrepreneurs who don't even realize the kind of problems that they will have as they continue on this path to building their vision for the future. Very insightful conversation, and I can't wait for you guys to hear this. Let's deep dive right in. Hi Bimlesh, thank you so much for making the time to speak to me today. How are you doing?
Doing great, Tarusha. Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm so glad you could make out, make the time and speak to our listeners today. Okay, just for their benefit, I've known you for a long time, but can you give a little bit of an introduction about yourself and how you perhaps got into Web3?
I'm the co-founder at Foundership. Before starting Foundership in 2021, I've been an entrepreneur for over a decade.
Right.
I built out two ventures, and before that, I started my career as a software engineer and way back in 1997. So my career spans over 2.5 decades now. So seeing the transition from Web 0.9 to Web 3 right now, as we call it, and it's been an incredible journey of being in the corporate world in the first 15 years of my life in Web 0.9, Web 1, and Web 2. And then transitioning as a Web2 entrepreneur, built out a healthcare startup, India's first connected healthcare platform called PharmEasy with a Z, not the unicorn with an S. We,
Okay.
though we though we both launched out on the same week, they turned out to be a unicorn, and we shut down after 2.5 years.
Okay.
Later, built out a venture studio, which got acquired by a U.S. fintech company for whom we built a micro-lending, digital-only micro-lending product for India on top of Aadhaar and UPI version 1.0. And
Okay.
their initial goal of 180 days kind of got hit in 6 hours. Thanks to the technology that we built and thanks to the Indian users who are looking for micro-loans. And that created an opportunity for me to exit as they raised a Series A and they acquired us. And this was the time when I was trying to mull on what to do next. And that's how me and my co-founder, Santosh, got together and Foundership was born. My introduction to Web3 kind of happened right at the cusp of 2008. I always tell that is the pivotal moment of why and how the genesis of Web3, blockchain, trustless, transparency, and everything was born, because the society at that time felt a lot cheated, especially those out in the US and those who had repercussions across the world. I being in a company that was building software for banks and for large hospitals, had the front row seat as we got impacted terribly as well. And that's how the genesis of my introduction to Web3 got started. Looking at the anger of people around who were severely impacted with the financial loss, with the loss of their homes, and the
Right.
entire lack of trust in the banking ecosystem and the governments, right?
Right.
So that entire anger is what got translated into what we see in the Bitcoin white paper and eventually, blockchain taking into various shapes and forms. Post 2008, after I became an entrepreneur, kind of lost track of what's happening on that side of the world. And when COVID hit, that's when my entire journey of getting exposure to blockchain all got started. And eventually, we saw a huge opportunity
Right.
in 2021, 22, where a lot of frenzy around trading was going on, and a lot of early stage startups were coming in, and a lot of very young first-time entrepreneurs were getting into Web3 without having any prior experience of building technology products or finding product market fit or even trying to raise funds and so on. And as an accelerator, that's the opportunity that we saw, where how we can enable global early stage startups to kind of build tangible companies and not just go behind the hype around token launches, but have a substance behind the token launch. And that's how we pivoted from a pure Web2 accelerator to a global Web3 accelerator, because two things triggered. One, a lot of young founders, first-time founders were getting into this space. And second, Web3 from day one had the opportunity to become global. And there has never been an accelerator from non-US regions that was offering support and network and ecosystem for global founders. And that was a spot that we found, and very happy to be where we are today.
Right, it's been quite a journey for you, like, you know, from early tech days to Web3 and now incubating these early stage startups. Now, my question comes around, I know and I have been a part of the foundership, you know, ecosystem for a while, and I know the kind of value you guys bring. So obviously more power to you people and your entire team for being able to do something like this, holding so many events and just creating and fostering a community which is not just encouraging but also a place where people can problem solve, you know, is very commendable. But you know, this comes with its own set of challenges, right? Like
Absolutely.
setting up and incubating early stage Web3 startups. Can you perhaps tell us a little about these challenges that you have faced while setting up you know, this incubator with a little bit of a twist?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the key so we went back to first principles, right? As to
Right.
what's needed for an early stage startup, and what's and when we mapped out what some of our other ecosystem accelerators in the market were doing. We both, me and my co-founder, both have been part of other accelerators in the past when we were at very early stages of building our startups. And we found a one-size-fit-all approach that was uniformly applied to the entire cohort. And this was something that was not of great value add. Second is in the Web2 world, the networks and ecosystems are very geographically dependent. To say that depending on where you are is where you have your maximum strength, but you could not take that network out globally. Third was while accelerators focus on doing a lot of value add at an entire cohort level and at a geographical level, but they were not able to rally out a community around with them, which could act as both as a marketing and as a distribution channel for the entire ecosystem. Everyone were obviously solving for go-to-market and for fundraise, but operationally, some of these gaps is what we saw. So one of the key things that we put in place very early on was our entire coaching philosophy versus a mentoring philosophy. Because the whole fact is, all of us as industry experts or as ex-entrepreneurs do have a lot of value addition to do, but we also have limited time. So the dilemma that always was that when I onboard a mentor, will the mentor be passionate enough in giving it forward only on at a 30,000 feet level, or would they also would love to get their hands dirty at an each startup level to their context? And in the industry, what we saw, most of them are mentors but not coaches. The
Right,
fundamental
yeah.
difference between these two for us has been that the coaches get involved over a period of 3 to 6 months, depending on the duration of the cohort, where they also have a skin in the game, versus a mentor typically comes in for a masterclass, shares their perspective, and moves on. So this, we were very keen that how do we make it contextual, and that's where our coaching philosophy comes in, that every startup that gets picked up into Foundership Accelerator has to define their 90-day OKRs, and it is based on these OKRs that the coaches get allocated, and the coaches push the founders to, by asking those hard questions and making them to do the hard yards, to say that, hey, what do you need from me that I can help you to achieve your goal? So
Right.
all our coaches have been onboarded with that simple philosophy that, hey, this is not a place where you earn your consulting hours, but this is a place where you can pay it forward to the right high intent founders across the world and be a part of a story that when they become big, you have an opportunity to claim your legacy. So
Right.
having a skin in the game, spending more dedicated hours with a startup, being very contextual, was one of our hardcore principles and philosophies when we started out, and this has turned out to be a great differentiator for us. Second is on the community side, as you said. Yes, it takes a lot of hard work when you're doing community across the world, especially with Web3. Because teams are global, expertise is global, the entire market is global because it is a 24/7 market, unlike New York Stock Exchange or an Indian Stock Exchange, which have a 6 to 8 hour working cycle. So your audience is predominantly talking the Web3 language, and this audience is spread across the world. And that inspired us to also look at how do you now create playbooks and how do you rally communities around the world and not just focusing on the geography that we are predominantly present in. So with that philosophy, we were able to bring out our community initiatives called BlockMate in about 37 plus cities in 2023, 25 cities in India and about 10 cities around the across the world. And this led us to create opportunity to take our companies out into these places, look for talent, look for users, look for partnerships, and obviously enable fundraising through this community-driven approach. And so today we are the accelerator that enables through our 3C model of coaching, capital, and community. And that's how a startup in our accelerator gets access to all the three by the time they graduate, and they only build upon from there. So at Foundership, we say that once you're part of our portfolio and family, you're always part of the family. Yes, you may not have that intensity of 3 months on an ongoing basis, but the entire Foundership team and its ecosystem are a message or a call away.
Right. And that is wonderful, right? To have this sort of a community which you can bank on as a founder. I think that is very, very valuable. And you feel like somebody has your back, because as an entrepreneur, it can be a very, very isolating, if not alienating, journey. Like, you take
Absolutely.
it on up alone.
So some of our
So
community events have actually led to our ecosystem partners finding talent, our startups finding investors. So it's been an amazing outcome, a point of view to see how communities, especially our IRL community events, have really yielded some tangible results.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that is where the that is how you feel like the satisfaction, I think, right? Because you are able
Right.
to create some immense value for folks, and that is why perhaps you keep doing what you do.
Absolutely.
So, talking a little about the challenges, like I mentioned that, okay, being an entrepreneur can be a very isolating journey, which is something that I've felt many times, because you
Yeah.
have your own peer group, and no matter how large your peer group has been, you feel that it in your friend group or your traditional friend group, that they perhaps do not understand the kind of challenges that you have. And creating that can be one of the challenges of perhaps trying to build a company. But from your perspective, what are the kind of challenges that you have seen these builders face? Like, what are the bigger challenges that entrepreneurs who are perhaps just starting off, they should be wary of?
A great question. I think this is very subjective to the strength that the team brings to the table. So we have seen teams that are very strong on tech but have no clue on marketing, no clue on on user acquisition. Whereas we have teams that are great on community and user acquisition but very poor on tech, right? But now if you apply this in the traditional world, it has a different journey. But in Web3, you could do both together and coexist, right? And but more so what's important is in Web3, because it's such a nascent and there's very smaller community of people who kind of believe in the entire crypto and blockchain narrative, that it's also easier for you to go ahead and build out a community even before your product is launched, right? Whereas because there has not been much reference points to some of these path-breaking ideas and approaches on be it on NFTs, on utilities around NFTs, and today when you're looking at different tokens, different forms of infrastructure, different forms of exchanges that can add different values, you have very few parallel in the Web2 world, right? So there is an opportunity to rally a community just around your narrative and being honest to your narrative. Now, different teams get it. A lot of teams don't get this. And this is where a challenge between a Web2 founder transitioning to Web3 versus a hardcore DJ who is native to Web3 trying to build out a Web3 startup. So we believe This has been a constant challenge when we work with startups and trying to identify what their core strengths are and navigating them through their strengths while they chip a little bit of their weaknesses. So at Foundership,
Right.
we strongly focus on the strengths rather than trying to focus on weakness and say that, hey, learn these things in 90 days. Because practically, you and I, as founders, you know that for us, learning is always on the job. You can't dedicate
Right.
out, say, a
Specific time, yeah,
specific
just from
time in the
learning.
day just
Yeah.
on an academic type of an activity.
Right.
So our
Because then
entire
you get into a place where, you're not taking any action, and that can be very
correct
frustrating as well. Right. And
correct
then entrepreneurs can be like perfectionists and they would
correct
want to perfect it. And then that itself becomes like a feedback loop from hell because, you're spending time just trying to figure out certain things and you're not taking action. And then that can cause like a lot of frustration as well.
correct So for founder teams where they do have a challenge on the marketing, we guide them through a small set of tasks to say that, hey, here is your mini playbook that can help you get started. But once you get off the road, you got to keep up the momentum of both building your founder personality and about talking about the problem and rallying your followers on different social media challenges that you are comfortable with and where your community is hanging out with. It could be Telegram, it could be Discord, or it could be Twitter. Figure out your channel, figure out your space, but start working towards it because that has to be part of your daily life, right? And this, when you give them a small, five task or a 10 task thing that they got to do on a daily basis, help some of these founders who have never done marketing, who have never built a brand, never put themselves out in the front, kind of navigate through this process. On the other side, you've got founders who are very active on social media, who know how to rally, the community behind them on different channels. And sometimes they're active on all the channels all the time, but they struggle on building out the tech, right? In
Right.
those cases, they have a very different problem statement. They are so busy being out front, that they are not able to spend time around the product roadmap or getting the tech out, before they look for investors or even looking for out for their users to get hand out on the product. So in those cases, you've got to guide them on, hey, so you can start building out a simple MVP, and there are different forms of MVP that you can build that you need to start engaging your early users who are very interested to work with you. So that kind of philosophy on help them prioritizing their feature set, identifying their roadmap, how do you get this done, if deciding on which chain that you want to build on. Do you got to build everything on yourself, or can you build on somebody else's stack? Is there plug and play stack that can help you get off the block? Are there some good hackers within the community that can help you build it in a much cheaper, faster, better type of a model, so that you are able to solicit feedback, right? So
Right.
two different type of entrepreneurs who face very different challenge, but we figured out that you work on their strengths and navigate them as on the job learning with guiding them on a few things that they can do, and they are able to move forward.
Right. Yeah,
The
that sounds. Yeah.
third challenge that we commonly see is the lack of appreciation of that Web3 is a global opportunity, right?
Right.
So
Yes. Yeah.
whether it's a US founder or whether it's an Indian founder or an Asian founder, but naturally the mind tends to limit itself to say that, you know what, I'm going to talk to the users just around me versus I'm going to talk to the users around the world. For
Right.
some, this change in mindset happens naturally, but for many of them, this change in mindset happens only through multiple conversations.
Right,
You say
right, right.
that, how I call this as the limiting beliefs, right? For whatever
Right, yeah.
reasons, we all have grown up by saying that, hey, you can't do X, you can't do Y, the world is like this, and
Yeah.
that's how our limiting beliefs we are born with, or we have grown up with some limiting beliefs.
Right.
And as founders, this is something that we need to be open to change. You can't build successful startups if you cannot overcome your own limiting beliefs. A lot of founders have limiting beliefs on money. They have limiting beliefs on being vulnerable. They have limiting beliefs on, on marketing, on even the way you work with global teams or having a global market. So
Right.
this has been a common challenge with many of the founders in our in the ecosystem that we've interacted with.
Right. I think you've enumerated a lot of the challenges that the early stage entrepreneurs kind of do face, when especially when they're starting off in Web3. And I could resonate with a lot of them. But your programs and like the Launch Camp, and there are, there is the 0x program that you have, they kind of help these startups, right?
Yeah.
Basically, help them in navigating the complexities of building and scaling their projects in Web3. Can you tell us a little more about these programs, and how can perhaps startups become involved if somebody is interested in getting involved in one of these programs and being a participant?
Absolutely. So we consider ourselves as a startup. So we have iterated on our own programs. We have solicited the feedback. So initially, we started off as a 6-month accelerator program, and with feedback, now we have brought it down to 3 because a lot of founders want to get quickly moving on to focused execution rather than after getting a lot of coaching through the program. So now our 0x camp is more structured, has got very tangible inputs and outputs that a founder can derive out of the program. So this is an early stage program, also called as early traction program. We do have certain partners who encourage founders to build on the chain, or we also have a multi-chain program where a startup can not dedicate it to one chain, but is looking at a multi-chain type of a solution. So this is a 3-month program. Startups who are eligible for this are typically who have not raised any institutional funds into the company yet, but have either received grants or have raised a small angel round from their family and friends. These are the startups that are eligible, and the product has not yet gone on to mainnet, right? It could be in an MVP, or it could be on a testnet environment, and so on. Post this, we have the Launch Camp program, which has now been rechristened as a program which is for startups looking for token listing, right? So this is a new program, or we have reiterated on this program about 4 months ago, and we now have startups who are now slightly ahead of the game and who are now getting ready for token launch or token listing. And this is an advisory program which is offered as a one-on-one basis. We kind of take on about 10 to 12 a year. This is not a cohort program. This is a one-to-one advisory program where the entire focus is from the journey where the startup is to token listing, right? So we act as that enabler in defining or working with them on their tokenomics, on their token strategy, on choosing the right listing partners, on even if you have to go through a launchpad, which is the right launchpad for this particular token. So look at us as a pre-launchpad partner, right? That's where we position ourselves to say that we work with several launchpads. We will give you an unbiased opinion on which is the right launchpad partner to work with so that you don't get lost between the marketing messages from different launchpads. And we bring in our ecosystem of coaches to work with you during this launch camp program as well. So you get the entire power of the foundership ecosystem, but with a very tangible goal that, hey, you get yourself ready for token listing and do what it takes to do that. So here the focus is the startup should have had at least 250K to 500K funds available to be part of this program. Because on an average, for you to get ready to token listing, you need a budget of about 200, 250K just for your token listing marketing activities, right? And then a bunch of other product and other related spends that you may have to go through. So these are for slightly the launch camp program is for startups slightly ahead of the game, and we are currently working with 3 such startups now. And on the 0x camp, which is for early stage, we now we are currently in the middle of our 5th cohort, and we have a portfolio of about total 40 companies now as we speak.
That's wonderful. So, you have different kinds of programs basically catering to the different stages of the startup, which makes this
Correct.
even more exciting, right? This is not like one solution fits all kind of an approach. That makes, I think, foundership very, very unique, because you're trying to solve the problem of entrepreneurs who, might not even aware that that problem exists at that point.
Right.
Ensuring and keeping in mind certain variables that they have in place vis-a-vis their startup. So this is absolutely wonderful to know. And if somebody had to perhaps get in touch with you regarding participation in these programs? How should they go about doing it?
Yeah, they can hit us up on Telegram, join our community, or even just visit our website. We have everything on our website,
Okay.
foundershiphq.com, or ping us on Twitter or Telegram. Anywhere you can search for Foundership, you will find us pretty much buzzing in all these channels.
All right, okay. That's wonderful. So any of you entrepreneurs who are listening in, I would highly recommend you checking this out, because Foundership as an ecosystem has added a lot of value in my journey and my journey as an entrepreneur. And moreover, you guys have a solid team. So that is something that I've always been a little in awe of, that you've been able to bring in people who are so aligned with your vision, and they are able to execute it so very well.
Absolutely. So very humbling to hear this, Tarusha. Thank you so much.
No, I've been very, like, I've been a supporter from you guys from day one,
Right.
and I think you are aware, very aware that I'll always be available to help you out in any way. But more than that, I think that what you're doing through for the ecosystem, that is very, very commendable, and I feel that you guys are like the go-to guys. You've been able to stand the test of time and all of these cycles, and you're still adding value. So
Right.
that is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I keep saying this. One of the key advantages as an ecosystem enabler is we can talk to everyone and we can work with everyone, right?
Right, yes, yeah.
Unlike an entrepreneur, once you choose a chain, you kind of locked in into the chain unless your solution goes multi-chain, and you got
Yeah.
to pick and choose your ecosystem partners. But
Yeah.
whereas one of the advantages of an ecosystem enabler is we can build our tentacles and increase our network multifold because everyone needs us and we need everyone.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is an industry that only grows when we are working together, and that is very, very imperative. I think that is what I've one thing that I've learned all of from all these years being in Web3, that community and just growing together become very essential here.
Absolutely.
So you have a lot of extensive experience in tech as well as an entrepreneurship. What do you believe are perhaps the key factors that contribute to the success of a Web3 startup in today's market, especially in today's market where we seem to be, liquidity seems to be a bit of a crunch for founders? And I do still think that money is available for the right kind of startup at the right time. But the general perception is that liquidity has kind of dried up. And what would be perhaps the key factors that you look for, and you think that really contribute to the success of a startup in this particular market?
Sure. So there are still a lot of investments going on the infrastructure
Right.
space.
Yeah.
So liquidity, as you rightly said, it's still available for the right founder, for the right problem statement. So it's
Yeah.
all about paying attention to what you can find nuances in that problem statement. There are 100 problems, but the way you would want to approach and understand the problem could be very different than the way I would look at it and want to. My understanding of the problem statement could very be different. For example, if you take real world asset, or so today real world asset as a marketplace is a dead idea, but real world asset, DeFi enabling liquidity, building synthetic tokens. Now these are all various shapes and forms of the same real world asset tokenization problem statement, right?
Right.
Now, you could slice and dice it differently. I could slice and dice it differently.
Yeah.
My insights on those slice and dice is what differentiates me as an entrepreneur versus somebody else.
Right.
Now, how good are my insights? How good can I attract my early adopters onto this problem statement and on the way how I'm solving it? So being out front is becoming even more important today because the world is so noisy and you got to create a different set of noise, right? Now, this set of noise can happen silently underground with a few rock star believers that you have a unique access to a very unique network that you have, or you could be out there and out noising everyone else so that you become the biggest noise maker and that's how you attract. So your personality will define how you attract your early adopters. And
Right.
if you change and adopt, you can bring in a very different set of audience. But if not, every founder in early stage plays to the strength, and getting this early adopters becomes very critical because it helps you, one, that people do resonate with this problem and that there is a real
Right.
problem, and second,
Yeah.
that there is a way to
It's
monetize.
validation. Yeah, it's
Correct.
validation.
it's validation. And second, that you over a period of time you also figure out that how will you monetize this particular problem statement. And trust us that which is something that you are also pretty familiar, that what you think of monetization today will naturally evolve and change as a monetization model in 6 to 12 months from now, because that's part of the founder's journey to discover and to iterate even the monetization models.
Right, absolutely. I think that kind of changes, right? It has to evolve.
Correct.
So that is wonderful to know that there is, these are the factors that you feel are going to be perhaps contributing factors for the success of a startup. And I think this kind of remains the same, no matter what part of the cycle you might be in. This is very foundational stuff, and that kind of cuts across different sectors as well. Perhaps not so much
Correct.
The community part, but, just ensuring that you perhaps say have a wait list, or say have, a few early adopters in line already who are ready to perhaps test out the product. This is something that works across Web 2 or Web 3.
Absolutely. Some of the shrewd entrepreneurs go also by the narrative to say that, hey, I will only build what the current narrative is being spoken on the market. So we have also seen some entrepreneurs take this route to say that I will just go with what's being spoken about. What's being trending. So we have seen short-term success in these models, where eventually these founders go ahead and end up either shutting down after some time or go ahead and pivoting and building out a more tangible company. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have started to see that trend in the last bull cycle. We are beginning to see early signs of that trend in the current cycle, where people are chasing narratives, and so narratives are driven by where the money is being spent today. And so you start going ahead behind the narrative versus going behind actually trying to solve a unique problem. So there are,
right.
So as an entrepreneur, you got to find your shoes which shoes you're going to be comfortable in.
Absolutely. I think, there is no right or wrong here. It's more that, which hard are you choosing? Like both the journeys can be hard in themselves, but what is something that is perhaps more suitable and more aligned to the vision of the future that you want to build?
Yeah.
So as the landscape, in Web3 continues to evolve, and it evolves very rapidly, what trends do you foresee shaping the future of the industry? And how is foundership adapting itself to stay ahead of the curve?
Fantastic. So I think, in the last 30 days, what we have seen is the ETFs getting launched on the Bitcoin is a big signal that you will start seeing a lot more money and liquidity being accessed by the large funds. And large funds coming in into Bitcoin is a signal that this industry is going towards within the next 10 years, you will see this becoming a norm rather than being seen with a strong lens, right? So one, this is going to become regularized in the next decade. So this means a lot of enterprises adoption will kick in, a lot of use cases will kick in, which we saw last year during the bear market. A lot of brand loyalty programs had started to adopt building out loyalty solutions around the blockchain. So this will only accelerate. You will see a lot of banks. We believe a lot of banks and financial institutions will also start offering a combination of Web2 and Web3 solutions for you and I as banking customers. So this will increase not only adoption, but this will also increase the very need on how do I manage a single bank account, which will manage both my fiat and crypto requirements, right? And how will now wealth management take place, inheritance take place, laws changing in different jurisdictions across the world. So a lot of these changes are going to come in. And the moment banks come in, you could say it could be the end of crazy bull cycles, but you will start seeing a lot more stability coming in into these into the crypto worlds is what we see happening towards the end of the decade. But that conversations have started. You'll find a lot more consumer awareness being done, lesser of Ponzi schemes, lesser of scams being taking place because technology will evolve. The moment a Web2 company comes in, a lot of compliances will have to follow in. So we see the early signs of this going towards getting regularized across different jurisdictions. And hence, a lot more use cases, a lot of startups opportunities will arise to do this. And when will this happen? While you see the enterprise is starting to take shape and form, but we see towards the end of this decade, a lot of these things will fall in place. And to do this, one is foundership is is continuing to invest with early stage startups. Sometimes we learn the narratives from what the startups are building. Because we have an active capital ecosystem network, we get to hear what are the areas that our capital partners are looking to invest in. So we take in inputs from a lot of these perspectives and iterate on our own theses as to say that RWA is something that we are going to look at very strongly. We're going to look at infrastructure very strongly. Loyalty programs is something that we have been very much looking at. Gaming is something that we see, because even till today, Web2 gaming is continuing to be a multi-billion dollar industry. And a lot of these Web2 gamers will eventually come to Web3 in adopting it and exchanging their digital assets in different shapes and forms. So these are broadly the four areas that we strongly look at. And as other areas come in, we'll be happy to learn from it and take in startups and grow them from there.
Right. Okay. That is very, very insightful. Now, coming to collaboration and community. Basically, these seem to be very integral to the ethos of foundership as well as Web3 as a whole. How do you foster a supportive ecosystem like of Web3 founders, leaders, investors, developers within your network? Because this is like a problem I think all founders face at some point or the other, that the community is not engaged enough or it's not value driven perhaps enough. So how do you keep those checks and balances in place to maintain the ethos with which you perhaps founded foundership?
Right. This is always a tough question to ask because community initiatives are seen over longer periods of time, and they're never an immediate ROI because it takes repeatability for people to build trust in your community. And once trust is built, that's when the network effects kick in to say that, hey, this is a great place for me to either learn. This is a great place for me to network. This is a great place where I don't get cheated or don't get taken for granted. So, we at Foundership, we strongly believe that community activity is something that everyone should feel at par, right? So equitable as a philosophy is something that we believe and we drive consciously in everything that we do. In everything else outside of community, our entire focus is always founder first, right?
Right.
So if you are expanding our ecosystem, why are we expanding the ecosystem? Because founders will benefit. If you are expanding our partner ecosystem, who's going to benefit? It's the founder who's going to benefit. If you are expanding our capital network, who's going to benefit? It's the founder who's going to benefit. So our why has been laid out very strong, that we exist for our founders and the community and the ecosystem is required for the startups to succeed. And when the startup succeeds, everyone succeeds. So
that's true.
Our entire why revolves as our beacon, and that beacon helps us to always have conversations in this context to say that, hey, how can we create a win-win-win across three different stakeholders, right? A partner, startup, and foundership, right? So these are the three stakeholders when it comes to a partner. Between an investor, it is investor, foundership, and the startup. Between a community, it is community, either a community leader or community participant, foundership, and the startup. So in all aspects of this, the moment you keep our founders at the center of it and rally the entire ecosystem around it, that is when we truly believe that everyone benefits over a period of time.
Right. Yeah, I think that is absolutely true. And, creating basically more value for startups, and ultimately what you said, I think this is very quotable, that ultimately when a startup wins, everybody wins. So just making sure that value is being delivered day in and day out becomes the very spine behind any community that kind of seems to be able to sustain itself and on a longer period of
time. Yeah. So there's a fundamental difference between how we approach community building versus a product company or a solution company approaching community building, right? If you're an exchange, you're building out a community to increase awareness about trading so that eventually all this knowledge will result in more trades and more user onboarding. Right. So every community building has to have a strong why. And as long as all your activities and decisions align to that why, there is no reason as to why you will not see all your metrics being met over a period of time. But if you try to look for metrics within every month, that's a, in my opinion, that's a wrong way to look at it. But when you look at metrics over each quarter, you will start seeing the numbers adding up.
Right. I think that is absolutely true. You have to be, obviously patience is key here, and
Right.
that is something that one does need to have if you are going to be looking at building something that kind of stands the test of time and is sustainable, because it doesn't happen overnight, right? An overnight success is like 10 years in the making.
Right.
So many startups at the moment, they struggle, and even in general, I think, and they struggle with fundraising and attracting investment. What would be your advice to such founders who are looking to secure funding for their project?
I think what we have seen is catching on to that narrative and your problem statement. So many times, if you don't make the listeners, especially investors, if you don't make them fall in love with the problem, you have lost the battle there.
Right.
And this is something that we very strongly emphasize at Foundership as part of our fundraising coaching sessions is first go very deep in understanding the problem that you're trying to solve and how do you articulate that problem. Because if I don't understand or relate to the problem statement, no matter what data, what content, everything that you narrate later is of no consequence.
Right.
And investors are also pretty much like your buyers, right? So there is a tendency, or there is a lenient, there is a leaning towards emotion versus just hard data. Yes, data is important, but that last 10% decision or the 20% decision always goes based on emotions. And that emotions are driven by FOMO. Emotions are driven by on how big is this opportunity going to be, how well you articulate that this problem can really become a big problem and this solution is going to be a multi-million dollar solution. This in is in a crux on how you communicate with your investor. Because end of the day, I as an investor, I have what are you trying to do as a founder? As a founder, I'm trying to communicate to the investor to say that instead of you putting $100 on another project, to take a bet that it will become $10,000, put this $100 in me because I'm the right horse to bet on. Because I'm going to make you not only $10,000, but I'm going to convert your $10,000 to, $100,000 or even a million. How are you going to make that million? Is the story you got to narrate and convince the investor through your storytelling, through your fundraising pitch deck, through this process. And if you get this act right, you will start seeing investors being comfortable to invest in you. And in early stage, it's all about your credibility, your resilience, your perseverance on how well you're able to communicate this narrative to the investors and show them that you're not going to be a fly-by-night operator, but you're around here to build a multi-million dollar company.
Right, absolutely. I think that is very, very important. Just the diligence, the sincerity, the vision, it gets translated well in the deck. Because at times, founders kind of get too close to their own idea and their vision, and they're not able to perhaps portray that very well. And that can be obviously their undoing, and they are not able to then get the message across and not be able to secure funding. I think, like we mentioned before, there is liquidity available for sound projects that will perhaps are utility driven, will stand the test of time, will get sufficient traction and increase adoption of Web3 in general.
Right.
So now, we are almost like short on time, but I would love to ask you if there is any success story from one of the startups that have gone through your program that you can perhaps share with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a bunch of them. I think because now close to 10 of our portfolio companies have raised funds, as being part of the Foundership program. And in the last 15 months that we have seen, it's not been an easy journey for any Web3 startup to be around and to raise funds. But nevertheless, some of them have gone ahead and done that. So we have Zoth, who is building out a DeFi platform for RWA. We have seen Book, which is in building out, again, time sensitive real world asset marketplace. For example, you could tokenize your hotel room bookings and trade it off secondary and so on. And I've got Circle of Games, who's been successful in both securing grants and also in raising funds. We will soon have some announcements coming around some of these shortly. We are waiting for some regulatory approvals to come in. But yeah, so these are some of them. And in our current portfolio, there are some active conversations going on who are raising funds. So some of these startups came into us with an idea on paper when they were very early on. Some of them came with just with an MVP. One of the startups went through a founder exit. Then they were able to find another co-founder. So we have had startups who have gone through some real challenges in terms of their ability to execute, their ability to stay focused, and yet build a very strong understanding of the problem statement and making the investors realize that, hey, we are true to our nature as founders, and we are going to build out a large business, and this is an opportunity for you to be part of the journey or miss the ride, right? And that's how some of these guys have gone ahead and been able to raise money even in the last 18 months, which has been a tough market to operate and to raise.
So now, I think, we've kind of covered all bases when it comes to entrepreneurs and their startups and, what foundership can do perhaps to help them. Looking ahead, do you have any kind of a milestone in mind when it comes to foundership itself in the coming years? What is the kind of impact you envision your work having on the broader Web3 ecosystem?
Yeah, absolutely. As foundership, one of our logical steps has been, putting our energies towards putting a fund together, because currently we do not invest, and that obviously has certain challenges. And we believe our ability to invest when we start a cohort will dramatically change both the outcomes and the expectations of an accelerator as well. So this year is going to be our focus on getting our fund together, where we'll be able to write that first check and believing in the projects that we back them to the hilt. Second is, this year we are also expecting some form of a bull cycle to come in. So let's see how this year pans out. So we hope it'll become a lot more easier for some of the good startups to raise funds with liquidity coming in as Bitcoin inches more towards the 50K and eventually goes beyond the 60K mark later through this year. So those are the signs that we are looking for in terms of easing investor access to look at projects to put in the first check and also come in for follow-on rounds. If as and when the bull market starts, we'll see a lot more projects going ahead with token launches. So that will generate a different form of liquidity than just equity investors coming in.
Okay. Yeah, I think that those are wonderful milestones. I can't wait for you guys to hit them. And I think knowing the team that you have, you would reach there in the time that you kind of have stipulated. Now, Vimlesh, because we are out of time, I would love to ask you one question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. You made a leap from, earlier tech days, Web 2 to Web 3. And now that you are in Web 3, what is the kind of advice you can perhaps give to somebody facing the same dilemma, whether, they should make that change, whether they should take that leap, and truly, for them to start living on blockchain? What would be your two, three suggestions for them?
Sure. I think if you're a first-time entrepreneur and have no clue on Web3, first align yourself with the principles of what Web3 brings to the table. I think that fundamental alignment is very important, because it becomes very tough to sustain over a long periods of time if that alignment is not there. If you're a founder coming in from Web2 to Web3, it's a big change, because in principle, that entire world is all about private, whereas this world is all about public. So that transition, change is important in the mindset first, and then second is into the ecosystem. Third, you will find, the Web3 ecosystem much more open to work together, much more collaborative to work together, because the ecosystem is smaller. You don't need too many. You will not find too many formal channels to do work. So you've got to be ready to operate in different channels of work, and even sometimes an email of an agreement is treated as an agreement versus putting together a formal MOU. So this is a big change that a lot of Web2 founders will find when you're coming into Web3. But once you come in, be assured that you got to move fast, because the technology change is so dramatic that what was a problem statement as long as 6 months ago may not be the same problem statement in the same shape and form. So you got to
Right.
learn, you got to adapt. you got to move on. So your ability to adapt faster is going to be a constant challenge, and you got to be mentally geared up for that process.
Yeah, I think that is very sound advice for somebody who is like perhaps looking to make a leap here.
Right. And why is it even more exciting today to start? It's just that because in this last 18 months, a lot of founders have gone who have had cash and who have been able to survive, gone ahead and built out some amazing products and solutions that can help you jumpstart much more faster than what was available 18 months ago. So the no-code platforms have become more robust. You got more analytics tools today on blockchain than they were before. So your ability to jumpstart and build out a product or even build out a narrative, try it out with a bunch of users in different geographies, depending on your use case, is much more easier and accessible today than it was 18 months ago. So pretty much in the case of Web2, it's much more easier to start today than it was 18 months ago. So it's never too late to start a startup, but give it a shot with full intent and with full sincerity. And there's no reason that you will not meet with success, with your true insights and understanding of the market.
Absolutely. I think that's wonderful advice, and that's a wonderful way to close up this particular episode as well. Once again, Vimlesh, thank you so much for making out the time to speak to me today. This has been a truly insightful conversation. I'm sure a lot of entrepreneurs will find this very, very insightful and be able to derive a lot of value from it.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Tarisha. Pleasure. Great questions. Great conversations. Look forward to talking to you and having you as a guest on my podcast soon.
Absolutely. Likewise. I would love that. Yeah. Thank you so much.